I'm Rachel C. Swanson, and you're listening to the Refine and Restore podcast. Welcome to the podcast where I help strip away the lies that are holding you back and restore your heart and mind back to what is true. From faith, relationships, purposeful living, personal and spiritual growth insights, this podcast is designed to provide inspiration and encouragement to help you grow into the person that you are meant to be. As we enter into summer, I want to highlight on this topic of missions and introduce you to a couple that my husband and I support because they have some great insight about the journey that they've been on so far, which is pursuing an overseas assignment to bring the gospel to others. Michael and Morgan LeBlanc share a dream to plant a church among an unreached people group in the tribes of Papua New Guinea. Michael and Morgan are also high school sweethearts and graduates from Biola University and California Baptist University before they got married in 2016. After leaving careers in the tech and education industry, Michael and Morgan have spent the last 2 years in training with Ethnos 360, a tribal missions group where they've been studying linguistics, cultural analysis, and church planting before they transplant themselves to the rural island of Papua New Guinea. They, along with their newborn son Nash, expect to arrive on the field of Papua New Guinea in January of 2020. They share in this episode about how this desire was birthed in them. Hint, they didn't initially see themselves becoming missionaries, challenges they've faced with this decision, and how it's already changing their lives, their minds, and their thinking by what they're learning through this unexpected path. Whether you have a heart for missions or not, I know this episode will inspire you, challenge you, and give you insights to chew on as you head into summer. Morgan and Michael, where did this heart come for missions and to serve overseas? Where did that first start?
The short version of that is I grew up doing competitive dancing and kind of like living in that world, and then grew up going to church at the same time, and kind of got to a point when I was a teenager where I realized, like, okay, I really want to pursue dancing, but to do this professionally, I don't feel like I can really like reconcile also being a believer. And so I kind of went on, like, I just started reading through the Gospels and just decided, okay, I want to know, like, if this God thing is real, and if it's not, great, then I can pursue dancing and like the arts with a clear conscience and like don't have to feel bad about it. But if it is real, then that changes everything. And so I just started reading through the Gospels and didn't make it very far, because right in Matthew, when I was reading about the life of the disciples and just the cost of following Jesus, that's when the Lord just really impressed upon me, like, oh my word, this is real. And I understood the gospel for the first time, and that changed everything. You can't just hear the gospel and not get the missional side of God's heart too. And just through that experience, I really felt just the Lord just kind of pressing that on my heart, saying, like, all right, you're going to quit dance, and like, you're going to serve me overseas one day. And that was when I was 15, so this has been a really, really long journey.
You're how old now?
25. So that's kind of where it started, but the Lord was super faithful to just grow that over the years, too. It was nothing that happened in, like, one moment or, like, one revelation. It was just, like, through learning more about God's heart and reading the Bible. It's like, man, God's a missional God, and His word was just so clear, and He's just been really faithful to, like, continue leading us in that direction.
Gosh. And what about you, Michael? How did this enter into your heart?
Yeah, it was probably a little bit of a longer process where...
Yeah. And how did you guys meet? Because isn't that how you guys met? Was through the mission field?
We met first day of high school. But one of my friends liked her. So, you know, bro code. I couldn't go after her. But then towards the end of high school, we started dating. And then about a month into our relationship, we went and served overseas for a month together. And we're like, is this wise? Like, but I feel like the Lord's calling both of us to this.
It just kind of kept happening. Like, for two or three summers in a row when we were dating, we would go overseas together on these, like, long, intimate, spiritual whatever. And then we'd go off during the school year to different schools, like, an hour away, kind of living our own lives. And by the time we, like, questioned, like, should we be doing this dating? We were just kind of too far dating at that point, getting engaged, like, well, I don't know if I would like condone that or promote that to other people dating, but it just kind of, it happened, and it is what it is.
Look at this now. So yeah, it was on one of those trips where I was not on board with missions. I just was kind of following the American dream, just wanted the bigger, better lifestyle, going to the best college, to get the best job, to have the best life.
Yeah. Well, that's really kind of what we're, our culture is conditioned, right?
Oh, yeah.
To
it's,
doing.
It's hardwired into us from elementary school.
Right.
And so, but it was on one of those trips that God just got a hold of my heart and just revealed that he has plans that are far above ours. And I just, I think for the first time really submitted to that. And then about a year later, we finally took this vision trip to Papua New Guinea. And it was for 3 months. And we just saw what the Lord was doing over there. And he just really confirmed that this is what we'd be doing long term. So that's kind of how we got to where we're at now. And then got married in between, had a kid, and then getting ready to head overseas.
That's amazing. So give us the aerial view right now of this general plan for what you are embarking on.
So we're with an organization called Ethnos 360, and they work specifically with the least reached and unreached people groups. So in the past, that has typically been the most remote jungles of Papua New Guinea and Latin America, but now they're starting to branch off into places like Vietnam and Thailand and places that are more urban, but are equally as unreached. And so that's kind of where our organization has shifted. But for us specifically, we took a vision trip to Papua New Guinea and the Lord just made it super clear. And so that's where we're headed. And so we just finished 2 years of missionary training. It's just an intensive program of linguistics and church planning and Christian life classes that kind of prepare us for everything on the field. So we just finished that about 2 weeks ago, and we have like 6 months here in California to continue building our support base. We're going to be serving our local church for about 6 months, deepening connections and bonds and getting visas, paperwork, all that. And then we're going to be hitting the field January 2020. And then from there, we'll spend a little bit of time in country before us and our coworkers start surveying different tribal works, move into one of those tribal works, build our house out of the trees, and then move in, start learning their national language and culture there, begin developing relationships, create a written alphabet, teach them how to read and write, and then begin presenting the gospel. So from the point we move in to the point that they're hearing the gospel, it could be anywhere from 3 years to 7 years of all the groundwork that we just desire to lay so that they have a clear gospel understanding. And then from that gospel presentation, it could be another 10, 15 years until they're mature enough for us to establish elders and move out of the tribe to kind of move into more of a self-sustaining church model. So that's kind of the high picture.
Yeah. I mean, so like, I don't think people can wrap their minds around that right now. I mean, you are literally going to a very rural place in Papua New Guinea for people that are, you don't even know. They're not on, I mean, somehow God put them on your heart. You have no idea the language. It's a totally different culture. It's a totally different environment. And you're like, yeah, like this is where we are called to go. I mean, that's just such an amazing heart that you guys have. But I know so many people are like, oh my gosh, I could never do that. I could never do what you're doing. And you've talked to me about this before. You're like, I don't like it when people say that, you know? So what would you say to that person who's like, I could never do that? I mean, was this something that you always wanted to do too? Or
No. And I think my answer is, well, neither can we. And it's foolish. Like, you have to be insane to think that this is a good idea. Just on a whim, like, yeah, let's move our family to the jungle, Papua New Guinea. Like, one, you have to be fully convinced of the gospel. But two, nobody does that unless the Lord makes it so clear to them. Because in our right minds, it's like, no, I like air conditioning and I like bubble baths and you know what I mean? Like, we're normal people. And I think, yeah, our answer to that is just usually like, well, we're not able to do it either. And it's seriously just by God's grace. Because like, if we think we could do this or we're some superhuman, super missionary, like to eat bugs, like camping all the time and like weird things, it's like, that's so, so not us. And it's just by the Lord's grace that he's allowed us to be a part of this. But yeah, if he didn't make it clear, there's absolutely no way like I would ever just dream this up in my mind.
Yeah.
And that's probably the comment that we get the most. And each time it's kind of an awkward interaction. I want to say like, no, we can't do it either. You could do it too with God's help. But yeah, each time turns out a little different.
How did God put that on your guys' heart then? Like, how would somebody, I don't know. I mean, I know God always speaks to people in so many different ways, but how did it feel very confirming to you guys that this is where you were supposed to be?
Yeah, for me, it was, like I said, a really long process. And it was really through a deeper study of the word, seeing that God is a missionary God. It's all over scripture, thousands and thousands of references to all nations. And just in the Psalms alone, there's hundreds of references. And then seeing that and seeing especially the first disciples, Jesus had such an authority in his presence as he walked, as he spoke those words, they followed him. And I think for the first time, as I read that Bible, as I was reading those verses, I felt the authority of God. I was like, yes, like God has called all of us to this. Whether we're actually going to Papua New Guinea in the remote thick of the jungle, or whether we're sitting in our air conditioning house, whether it's local or global, all believers are called to missions, whether that's going or sending. And so we just felt that through our experiences and through our vision trips, he's made it really clear that us going to Papua New Guinea was what he had for us.
Yeah. And I think like on one hand, it could be a long process, but also one thing I think a lot of people think like, oh, you need to get some special call. It's like, okay, no, like absolutely follow the Lord with wisdom and discernment. And that's going to look different for everyone. But there was no like, I don't know, the heavens didn't open. You know what I mean? Like there was no, yeah. Nothing weird yeah. about it. It's just, yeah, for someone that may mean going to medical school and becoming a doctor or whatever, being a businessman and reaching like that community. And for us, it just happens to be going overseas. But there wasn't anything weird or magical about it, which I think missionaries get like a weird rep for sometimes. You know what I mean?
I'd say you're probably just following that deeper peace that God put on your heart. Like there was some sort of, I mean, as much as there's also fear, but there was this also this peace and this desire that probably what felt unnatural to you. It wasn't something that you're like, okay, yeah, I really want to do this. But for some reason, just God made it very clear. Like, I feel like this is where I'm supposed to go. I feel like this is the next move. I feel like this is where we're supposed to take the next step with God. And so I love that you did that. You know, you're just, yep, we're going to be obedient because not everybody always is. So, I mean, what are you most scared about, if I can ask, of what you're embarking into? I'm sure it's a bit different for both of you. So,
yeah, I think the biggest thing that we're scared about is just the unknown. Mm. Both of us had jobs. We both graduated from college. Yeah. We were set up. Our parents are amazing and just give us a great launch platform post-college. And now we're kind of leaving all that to jump into the unknown for this church planning mission that may take 10 years, might take 25. We might have coworkers the whole time, or we might be the only set of Westerners in that tribal location. So I think it's just the unknown. And even we might complete this, or God might bring us home. And I'm scared of moving into a tribe and seeing how excited they are to receive missionaries, where the Lord says, harvest is plentiful, but the laborers are few. And Papua New Guinea is a great description of this, where they're begging for missionaries. Mm. And so some of those tribes are moving their entire villages closer to a river, closer to an airstrip, just to get missionaries, entice people to come in. So I think my fear is moving into one of those places, them seeing missionaries after years of writing letters, and then a couple of years in, us leaving. And yeah, that's really hard, but that could be what the Lord has for us. And it might not be a full 20 years and a Bible dedication ceremony. And like you see in the videos, it might be something a lot different. But for the time being, we're kind of taking that first step. But the unknown is the biggest thing we're scared of.
I bet.
And spiders.
And spiders. I hate spiders too, especially really big ones, which I'm sure there's some really big ones there. So what are you guys most excited about?
I think we're just most excited to see, Lord willing, a completely animistic people group controlled by the spirit world and living in fear and darkness, that literally they don't know the gospel. They have no access to truth, to then seeing that transformation of them hearing the truth and being set free from all these demons and just darkness and just like this whole world that they've been controlled by from their ancestors. And I just think it's such a privilege. Like, we're able to know who translated the Bible for us, so we're able to read it. And it's like, not in a prideful way, but like the Lord has allowed us to take part in this. And by his grace, one day they'll be able to know, like, oh yeah, this group from wherever, the LeBlancs, not that it's about us, but it's like, what a privilege to take part in Bible translation and like leaving something permanent so they can grow in God's word. Not everyone gets to do that. And it just gives me chills to think they, like, unless people go, they have no way of hearing the gospel. And I think that's what gets us, is these are like the remotest of the remote people. And I don't know, like Michael said, the harvest is plentiful and the labors are few. And the word that just always comes to mind is privilege. And this is like, yeah, there's a lot of hard things and scary things, but there's nothing else we'd rather be doing. And we just feel so honored that this is where God keeps leading us.
And as exciting as all that really is, truly, being real, there's probably been quite a few difficulties with either wrapping your mind around what's going to happen, or even just ones that right now that you've experienced just walking through this process, probably from just sharing it with family or friends and the fact that you're going to be leaving. So maybe you guys can share just what's one of the most difficult things you've each faced with this so far.
Yeah, I think it's probably just the never-ending transition, the never-ending goodbyes, and leaving family. Especially in our Western culture, we've begun to idolize the family. Family right now is the number one preventer of missions in the Christian realm. And it's just so hard that that's the reality. But I get it, because it's so hard. We just got a little taste of it moving out of state. But every...
Because you were, sorry, really quick, you were out of state in Missouri doing the training. You're from California. Now you're going back to California for a little while until you go to Papua New Guinea.
Yep. Yeah, our home base is in California. We moved to Missouri for the training. Now we're back before we head overseas.
And that was almost like a little taste of like, oh, this is going to be hard, right?
Yeah. And I think just there's so many layers of loss that the Lord begins to almost show us of like, we need to be stripped of these things. And almost stripping us down to our core identity of disciples of Christ, being okay with that and being content and satisfied in the Lord alone, realizing that the family of God is even just so much bigger. And that's something that's going to last. Earthly family, it's going to pass. As good of a gift and as much as we love our little son, the family of God is what's going to last. And so looking forward to the future day where we're able to sing alongside new members of that family of God and being able to share the gospel with them, I think pushes us through those hard days.
I agree. I think relationships change and it's hard and friends move on. The Lord is so faithful to bring new friends where we go, but this has just been a really long journey with family, and they didn't choose this, but they're being directly affected by our decision. And I think
you're talking about like your parents.
Yeah, our parents.
You know, yeah.
Yeah, it's like they didn't choose what we're doing, but like day in and day out, they're going to be affected by it, and just us not being there for years at a time. And I think just something we have to keep reminding ourselves is the Lord called us to this ministry, and he's big enough to call our family into it too. And like, it's not our job to try to logically explain this to our dads and have it make sense, or, you know, deal with all the emotions. It's like, no, like we just get to be obedient and be faithful and trust that he's working in their lives separately. And, but yeah, I think knowing that it doesn't always feel worth it right now, which is really hard, but just keeping that eternal perspective of, like Michael said, one day this is all going to be worth it, even if it doesn't feel like it right now.
Yeah.
Yeah. And we have the promise in Revelation that says that there will be worshipers of every tribe, every tongue, every nation. So our efforts in this people group will not go wasted. And if we're not the ones that bring them the gospel, we'll still play a small part. Right. And so we go in with the guarantee that one person in that people group will come to know the Lord.
Mm-hmm. Planting those seeds no matter what. So how has this path that you guys have embarked on, how has this changed you guys? Just going through the training where your eyes open to a lot of things, where it's you feel like you've kind of changed through this process.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, yeah.
Just the 2 years. I can't imagine going overseas without proper training.
Yes.
We spent 2 years in church planning training, linguistic training, so many things to set the foundation to do it right. Because a lot of missions now are after just the quick fix, yeah, numbers oriented. But the reality is a lot of short-term trips and things like that that say, oh yeah, 100 people came to know the Lord. They said, yes, I believe, because that's part of their culture. Right. They can't shame you and say no. So they say, yes, I accept your Lord. I'll add him to my collection of 1,000. So the training is just so, so important. And just the discipleship life on life with experienced missionaries that have been there, done that, kind of forced us to recount the cost. And even when we had our son Nash about a year ago, that just brought back a whirlwind of emotions of what the heck are we doing? Like, God, are you still in this?
Yeah.
Because it'd be really nice to stay home. But through the whole process, going in, I always knew that it was a privilege serving the Lord. But now, after being a missionary for 2 years, I feel like I actually know it in my heart, moved mm-hmm. from the head to the heart, that yes, this is a privilege and it is one day yeah. going to be worth it. So I feel like we have greater contentment as a result.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. And I think too, just the Lord has just been showing me like the unexpected is never going to stop happening no matter where we live. It doesn't matter where we are. And you know, you could die crossing the street tomorrow in California. Like moving to the jungles isn't the craziest thing in the world. And
yeah,
but just, yeah, Michael was talking about all the transition. And then like, I think I don't handle transition as well as I like to think I do. And God has shown me that. And just thinking forward to like, okay, this is going to be the new normal. And how do I be a steward of transition and steward it well? And what do I learn from it? And it's not just like a period to rush through to get to the next place of comfort. Yeah. Cause I feel like we've learned the hard way and those places of comfort are few and far between sometimes, but you don't want to live chaotically in your heart and your mind in between those times. So it's like, okay, Lord, how do I just have your peace and give me your rest and the mind of Christ throughout these crazy transition times? Because otherwise you're just going to go insane and waiting for the next, you know, comfortable place in life, which yeah. is not a good way to live.
No, it's not. So as just a last thought, so if somebody was feeling like there was this burden on their heart, but they feel like this burden on their heart for missions and they don't, maybe this is the first time that's been kind of tugging at them, or maybe, you know, they're realizing, huh, there's a change or a shift in perspective that I didn't really see before. What's one thing that you feel like has been significant that could help some change somebody's mind or life in understanding that maybe they're called to it, or maybe they need to be more open-minded to it, or yeah. maybe, you know, there's something about this whole call to missions and really being a disciple to others of all nations that maybe they haven't thought of before?
Yeah. I think the biggest thing that helped us was just surrounding ourselves with counsel. It's a huge decision. And so we had the elders at our church, significant men and leaders that were in my life, women that were in Morgan's life, that we said, hey, we want to take this vision trip, which is just an awesome idea. It doesn't necessarily need to be a missions trip, but just go on a vision trip.
I love that.
See what the Lord's doing overseas.
Start small.
Yeah, God can use that in incredible ways. So pray about a vision trip and then go on the vision trip. Take that first step. It's all about not making that very end decision, but make the first one. Do the next thing. Just take that next step. So pray about a vision trip. Have other people praying into it as well.
Yeah, that's funny. Right before you said surround yourself with counsel, in my mind, I was thinking don't involve too many people, but in a different way. Like, well, I think sometimes we can just like talk to everyone but God. And so yeah. I would say, just get in the word, get alone with God. And like, yeah, when you said do the next thing, there's an Elizabeth Elliot quote and it goes something like, does it make sense to pray about the future if we're not willing to obey and the thing that lies before us today? Rest assured, do what God tells you to do now and he'll show you what to do later. And I think so many times we just can talk in circles, talk to a million mentors, pray, like yeah. talk to your friends, talk to whoever. It's like, just do it. Pray for the next thing. What is the very next thing you need to do? It's going to show you the next step, but you don't need to commit to missions right now.
Yeah.
It's not about making the very end decision, but making the first one. Pray about it, get in the word, and get alone with God. The quote by Elizabeth Elliot they mentioned needs repeating. I looked it up to give you the exact quote, which goes like this. Does it make sense to pray for guidance about the future if we are not obeying in the thing that lies before us today? How many momentous events in Scripture depended on one person's seemingly small act of obedience? Rest assured, do what God tells you to do now and depend on it. You will be shown what to do next. If you want to follow along to support Morgan and Michael on this journey, go to their website, theleblancfamily.org. That's the LEBLANC family.org, or check out the organization they're a part of at ethnos360.org. If you can do me a huge favor and please leave a quick review on iTunes for all you iPhone users out there, I would so greatly appreciate this, as I can't keep giving high quality episodes without your help and support with this show. All right, keep having a great summer, and I will continue to try to stay sane with my three littles home with me.